See, I would just like to kind of like throw it out there that please look into if this story has interested you or you've been following the BWU already, look into other local union actions being taken by the Crush Bar Workers Collective. They're fighting for a similar in a similar situation as the Voodoo Donut Workers Union, as well as looking into, you know, the Burgerville Workers Union, supporting them, and just labor overall. I think right now, going into COVID, supporting labor and workers' rights are going to be paramount for us having any sort of a say on how things are handled during this very deadly pandemic on the work floor. And as Oregon starts to open back up and other states start to open back up, I hope that this is a topic of conversation that is addressed further in our country.
Where can we link to provide more information about this?
You can link to, let's see, we do have our website. I would recommend linking to our Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Those are going to be our three most active social media platforms.
Samantha, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to an interview with Samantha Bryce of the Voodoo Donut Workers Union. They have a large-scale picket coming up on Saturday, July 25th at 1 p.m. at Voodoo Donut's Old Town location on Southwest 3rd Avenue. For more information, check them out online at
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good evening. You're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. We are very honored today to have Tessa Scheller with us from the Astoria LGBTQ Center. Tessa, welcome to Trans Positive.
Well, good evening, Emma, and thank you.
So, Tessa, you are with the you live in Astoria, is that correct?
I live near Astoria out in the country, and Astoria is where we have the Lower Columbia Q Center, yes.
The Lower Columbia Q Center, oh great, thank you, yeah. And how long has that community, the Lower Columbia Q Center, how long has that been around?
Well, it's a nice and a fun story, Emma. We being a few friends and people within the trans community, we've been meeting together for about 7 years. as a group, and we called ourselves the Lower Columbia Transgender Alliance. And we've been meeting at what's called the Harbor out here. And the Harbor is a domestic violence, sexual assault resource center. And we took the training and we worked with them. We facilitated a grant for them to do that work. And we met at the Harbor for several years. And as part of their remodel, we were going to be creating a meeting place. And we said to ourselves, we'd just as soon have a meeting place that was for all queer people, not just the trans people. And that's how the idea got started. We were offered a space in the Harbor. And so we spent about a year between 2014 and 2015 having community meetings. We did that at Clatsop Community College. We were lucky enough to have the county manager, who's part of the community, be one of the facilitators for those meetings. And we determined what the community felt was most desired, most needed in a Q center. And the words safe, welcoming, resources, diverse, inclusive, all those touchstones that you know well, of course, were part of our mission statement and remain so today. So we are a safe and welcoming resource center for the Lower Columbia area.
Well, that's great. So you started about 7 years ago. Now I know that you have a physical location. It's probably closed right now because of COVID-19, but it's kind of over there by that bridge, isn't it?
Yes, we've moved a couple times. We moved from the Harbor to the Astoria Armory, and we were there for several years. And we recently renovated spaces at 171 West Bond Street in Astoria. And that's in the part of town, the westernmost part of town, and we call it the Uniontown area. It's got quite a history. And we have a wonderful new facility that's very sunny and exposed and has views of the bridge and the river. We're very fortunate. We're in somewhat of the gayborhood, if such a place can exist in a small town like Astoria. So we're enjoying it very much, and we had a grand opening. We spent a month remodeling, and then we had a grand opening in February, and about a month later, we ended up closing our doors. We've since been having mostly Zoom-style meetings, like everyone else, and then recently started a hybrid. We had some, especially as you might guess, some young people that said, well, we'd like to continue meeting, and since our area is now in Tier 2, where we can have up to 10 people, that's been part of our guidelines. If we have enough people to staff the place and volunteer, and there's enough people that want to come in for an in-person meeting, we've facilitated that. Still, I think most of us are choosing to be very careful and do meetings by Zoom.
Oh, that's great, though. The option of having that connection with another human being, I think in some ways it's so important, especially if you're queer, if you're, you know, any of the categories of the queer rainbow. There's a lot of people who really need the comfort and interaction of another person. I mean, that's how all of us came out. You know, we didn't come out on Zoom. Maybe kids are doing it now. I don't know. But, when we were younger, I mean, we had to see another person to be validated for our own experience. So I can understand how, I don't know if you saw in the news, but Governor Brown yesterday created a new mandate because COVID-19, unfortunately, has been going up in Oregon. And yesterday, the governor's new mandate is that you have to wear a mask if you are within 6 feet of somebody else, whether you're indoors or outdoors. And of course, she also she instituted the indoor spaces. You can only have a maximum of 10 people. So, but it sounds like, you know, your Q Center is following those guidelines. So that's wonderful.
I think you're right about that. I think that's what's been happening with a lot of our meetings and with a lot of people. As you well know, a Q Center is going to see people coming out, relocating, looking for resources, but that vital connection, you're so right. People want to see each other in person. They want to feel validated with that affinity, and that affinity works a lot better in person. So our meetings have been maybe cut in half by Zoom, and people are still very anxious to meet one another. So we've done different hybrid events to facilitate that as well. A lot of fun. It's been a creative enterprise.
But for those of us who have compromised conditions for whatever reason, which actually makes up a large portion of the queer community, it's really important for us to be able to stay safe. And so it's really great to have those hybrid models. You know, I mean, I talk with so many people in the queer community who have various health conditions, and this has really been hard on them, but they've also been so grateful for Zoom, because on the other hand, Zoom, for those of us who already at least are out and we have some strength with, you know, we've already been through it, but we still need support and we still need connection. Zoom is really a lifeline for so many people. Well, it's, you know, I think a lot of Oregonians don't know that there's a queer community even in Astoria. I mean, when most of us go to Astoria, you know, we think about like the Flavel House and of course the Maritime Museum, you know, and getting out there to Fort Stevens and seeing the what's the name of that shipwreck out there? I can't remember that.
Peter Iredale.
Yeah, the iron. Yeah, exactly. But I think a lot of people don't think, oh, there's a queer community. I mean, obviously there's queer people there, but not every you know, small town in Oregon has a Q Center. What's different about Astoria? Why does Astoria have, you know, a Q Center when a lot of places don't, you know, a lot of towns of similar size don't have one?
That's a really good question, Emma. And, you know, our history goes back quite a ways. I'm fortunate to have spent just about 41 years in the area. We arrived in 1979. I was the nurse anesthetist for the then Seaside General Hospital. And what I found when I was coming out in 1982 was that there is a very definite and real, you know, queer community, but, you know, our legacy, our heritage is the closet, how terrible that truly is. So my first attempts at coming out in the early 80s meant that I was out with a few friends and a few people, and we would meet each other's homes and we would, you know, get together that way. But back in the OCA days, Oregon Christian Alliance, I think it was called, or something like that, and they were trying the ballot measures. There's nothing like necessity being the mother of invention. And when we were faced with a threat like that, it led to organization, and we created the North Coast Pride Network. And it was ostensibly about politics, Emma, but after a while, pretty soon, we decided we would take over a bar every month and create a place where we felt safe, and people would gather for drinks and cheer and merriment, and that kind of validation that we talked about earlier, that's so essential to people that have been rendered nearly invisible much of our lives. And I'm speaking as a 69-year-old person, so I lived in the 50s and 60s when really essentially no one was out. It's a better world now. I love it.
That's great. So when you when you first got started, then, so you're talking, let's see, you're talking 1982, and you said there was something called the Oregon Christian Alliance that was doing some sort of ballot measures. Can you tell me about that? Because I'm not even familiar with that history.
Oh, ballot measure 9, ballot measure 13 is what I recall, and they were basic attempts to keep us from showing ourselves in public, essentially, and take rights away that we essentially didn't have and weren't really exercising. So it was that kind of straw man sort of argument of they're going to take over the world, and there was very few people that were out, that were public, and I was one of them. One of the women up at Clatsop Community College, Margaret Frimeth, and I will use her name because she's a queer hero, as recognized by the Q Center in Portland and the Northwest groups there that does the history. And we spoke at the public library. We spoke up about the rights and the reality of queer people in our lives and the value that we bring to our community. And that organization existed for quite a while, but it was mostly social after the ballot measures were defeated. We've been having a nice mix of social, politics, education, big emphasis.
So wow, that's quite a trend. That's like, so over the course of 40 years, you've seen your community go from Christians trying to create ballot measures basically to make it illegal to be seen in public to now having a Q Center. That's quite a story. It reminds me that, like, for all of us, like, our transition and our building of power and strength within the community, it happens wherever we are, you know. So like, if we, wherever our community is, that's where we kind of have to look to kind of build our strength.
You're right again. You know, we really are. Queer people are everywhere. Trans, queer people, we are part of the fabric of every community. It's just that we've been so less visible, and it's different now. You know, it's our ability to be integrated and to be visible says, okay, we're part of City Hall, we're part of your healthcare community, we're part of every kind of organization you can imagine. But when people stand up and say, yeah, me too, it's suddenly, okay, I know someone. There's someone in my family. There's someone in my community that I admire, respect, or have some regard for that brings value to my community. It might be a teacher. It might be the doctor. It might be my anesthetist. So people got the idea that, you know, this wasn't just one-off, that there's people that are queer, that are lesbian, that are transgender, gay, bisexual, that we're part of the community in a very deep way. And
yeah,
it just takes the reality of people being visible to make that reality understandable for folks that are not, you know, not in touch with us, so to speak.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. So back in the 80s, this group, the OCA, tried to do these ballot measures, and so then in response you formed the North, what was it called again, the Pride Network?
Yes, well, I came out in the early 80s, Emma, and then many years later, in the 90s, the OCA tried the ballot measures, and we created the North Coast Pride.
North Coast Pride.
As a way to organize. Yeah, to organize and to fight back, if you will.
Yeah.
And I remember Lonnie Bond actually came out to Astoria and Warrenton. He was actually quite good at helping people become more polarized. He'd ask people to raise their hands if they were upset about gay people, and raise your hand if you were defending gay people. So he was able to quickly polarize a group of people into being at each other's throats rather than recognize each other as neighbors.
Now, who was
the
that?
The attempt failed. A fellow named Lon Maybon.
Lon Maybon? Oh, okay.
Lon Maybon, yes.
Okay.
some of his soldiers are still out there fighting that battle to eliminate or make us invisible, but they actually, some of them actually went off to Africa to spread the bad word.
Oh, yes, I heard about this person. That's right. Is he an Oregonian?
It's part of our history, sadly. But the shining lights in our community were steadfast, and the people, again, that were so essential to a community, and recognizably so, as part of government, as part of healthcare, as part of the community in so many respects, that was, I think that's part of what's been going on for the Astoria North Coast area, is there's been a lot of out people for a long time. And people have said, hey, it's no big deal. Just like a lot of younger people are saying, what in the world is the big deal, folks? Come on, let's get over this.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I documentary last night about Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn was kind of the protege for the president, whose name I will not mention, but 45 was kind of a mentored by Roy Cohn, and Roy Cohn was this just really like awful, really repressed queer man who like got his career started in the 1950s with the prosecution and conviction and execution of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. And then he went on to work under Eugene McCarthy during the McCarthy era, when there was the purge of communists within the federal government in Hollywood. And then he kind of built up his career in New York. And of course, that's where he became a mentor for the current Not My President. And he was just a really vile, just evil person. But his actions had so much negative influence, and they kind of continue on today. But the negative influence also like has created this like counter push, you know. I mean, the things that it's just interesting how like the forces of hate like are always there, and they're always kind of pushing against the forces of hope and of tolerance and of of, you know, optimism. And it was really interesting because I've known about Roy Cohn for a long time, and I actually learned about him back in Minneapolis, where I know we're both from, where I saw a film about him and a guy named Jack Kahn, who was this another, they're both Jewish, and I'm Jewish too, and they were like two people who sort of came of age at the same time in New York. And Jack Kahn was this like really amazing, not that well known, very esoteric performance artist who did these kind of rambling stream of conscious performances about identity and about like what's happening now in the moment, who was taking like the idea of how you do stream of conscious art and kind of translate it into performance. And by doing that, he was using that to validate his identity as a queer femme. At the same time that Roy Cohn, who was this like really repressed, you know, gay man, he never really came out, but everybody in New York, I mean, it was just an open secret that he was queer, you know, was doing all of this just like really evil stuff. I mean, including mentoring the person who eventually became the Not My President, who's now doing so much damage and spreading so much hatred and white supremacy in our country. So it's interesting, you know, your story about this guy who kind of got you motivated to create the North Coast Pride, it's just interesting how like we have to come out sometimes when we have to come out, because it's just essential, you know, for our survival. But it also like kind of motivates us to like eventually create Q centers, you know. So sorry, that was
well, and of course, the risk was far greater for us, Emma, back in the 80s and 90s. We didn't have the protections we do today. And so one of my fears, and of course fears that some people may still currently have, was for my family and my employment. And in fact, employment for me really did change. And I was seen as a queer person back in the 80s and 90s, and it was not long before my job was no longer tenable for me. And I left my position at Seaside General Hospital after it became Seaside Providence Hospital, and I took a job with Kaiser for the next 22 years.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we had Lori Buckwalter on the show, about a month or two ago. And Lori Buckwalter was kind of talking about coming out in Oregon back in the 80s and the 90s too. And she was talking about her history with Providence as well. And I think Providence has become much better now, obviously. But mostly because it's had to.
Well, yes, the reality is pretty obvious to them as well. And in fact, I worked for Kaiser, but I was also working at St. Vincent's Hospital for Kaiser for a number of years. So I was back there, but I was a Kaiser employee, so I had some protection from being fired. And then after I retired, I was invited back as to do a Trans 101 for St. Vincent's Hospital a few years ago. So I got to talk to them about my experiences basically living as a queer person while being harassed and hounded by people who felt very comfortable with all kinds of antipathy and discrimination directed in jokes and everything else on a near constant basis. Back in the day, you know, when in high school you couldn't go down the hallway without hearing the word bag, and every joke in had something to do with gay people. So it's been a real solidly improving change for us. Now people have protections for their job. It's not that covert and overt discrimination have disappeared entirely from people's hearts. That still goes on, but now we do have rights, and more people, fortunately, are visible, which makes the reality easier for the rest of our neighbors and family and friends to understand. We've always been here, and we just have not been as visible and counted.
Yeah. Do you think that coming out and being queer in rural Oregon is a different kind of process? Are you still, like, are there still things that people have to kind of think about when they're out and queer? Like, do you have to change your dress a little bit? Or, do you have to kind of, like, keep it a secret? I mean, so only some people know. I don't live in rural Oregon, so I don't know exactly what it's like to be queer in rural Oregon. I'm so proud that there's a Q Center in Astoria. And of course, a lot of Oregonians would not think of Astoria maybe necessarily as quite the same as, like, say, Burns, Oregon or something. But, like, I mean, I know the coast, and the coast is very rural in some ways. It's much more conservative.
Yeah.
Even Astoria, Warrenton, so what is it like, being queer out on the coast? Is it different from being queer in Portland?
Yes, yeah, so I think it is, Emma. There's certainly greater visibility in the metropolitan area, but that is changing. And I credit younger people. I credit our seniors for creating that pathway, but the pathway's grown wider and more visible and more obvious. So to this point, we are seeing a phenomena that I really hadn't expected, Emma. We've been working with youth a fair amount. We had a board member for the Q Center talk to our group about, and this was several years ago, about the harassment her daughter was having because she had two moms. So this wonderful lesbian couple had a couple of kids in school that were being harassed. They're wonderful students, really smart and engaged students, but they're being harassed because of their parents being lesbians. And that started us on a pathway toward dealing more with education. And At the time, I was a trustee for Class of Community College. So we were able to institute a safer learning conference up at the college that just really started to spread amongst the school districts to the point now that we've been invited to table during registration for middle school and the high school. We're invited to a number of events. We have growing, thriving gay straight alliances at the school. We threw a dance for some of the students, and the first year we did it, we had about 25 students, and it was a lot of fun. And last year, Emma, we threw a party for the middle schoolers at Astoria Middle School, and we were invited to have the dance at the school. And so this means this entire school district was understanding. They'd actually had staff come out, if you will. And so they were dealing with it, students and with staff being out, trans and queer people. And they recognized the responsibility to step up. And as one of the offshoots of that, we had this wonderful dance, and over 100 young people showed up for this gay straight dance. Over 100 students in Astoria Middle School. They don't drive, Emma, so they had their parents drive them there. And that means 100 accepting parents, or at least tolerant enough. They said, have a good time at the gay straight dance. And they did have a good time. I was anticipating somewhat furtive behaviors, you know, or people kind of shy. Oh, heck no. I bought a couple of flags. I bought the trans flag and the pride flag. And those flags never touched the ground. It was like they were sacred, and they marched them around the auditorium, and we had a DJ. And I think they knew every word to those songs, and they just were a cohesive group. They were a fun group for each other. It was just such a different life than I knew as a 13-year-old person. I literally had to go out to my car, Emma, and just kind of cry a little bit. It was overwhelmingly beautiful. It really was. It was just something that, as a queer organizer, that I live for. I never anticipated I would see something like that in a small town. And you know, we've had 5 years of Pride events out on the coast. This was our fifth year, and we initially we canceled the whole thing. We recognized we weren't going to be able to have our usual gathering of, get this, several thousand people show up for our block party in a town of 10,000 people. I'm clicking them in with the little clicker to keep our numbers straight. Several thousand people will come to our party, Emma. So we missed that big time, but we decided we were going to do something. And we have such a wonderfully creative bunch of folks out here. A man named Jack Daly is a wonderful man that has the equipment for basically creating a drive-in movie in downtown Astoria. And that's what he does. So he does make a couple of drive-in videos, and people stayed safely in their cars, and we broadcast from the sister radio KMUN, and we had several hundred people rather than several thousand people enjoying our videos that we made to introduce ourselves and to talk about some of the events for Pride. And we just had a wonderful time, and then the next day on Sunday we had a car parade. So we kept it safe, but we had events where people could literally wave the flag and be out there and be visible. And every year we've done that, Emma, we've been concerned. We're safe, right? We want to be conscious of what could go wrong, and we've had literally no harassment, no discrimination. Nobody's yelling or giving us the finger or any of that kind of business. Astoria is a very tolerant, if not graciously accepting place. I just have enjoyed myself here immensely. It's just a wonderful group of people, and that's not true for every queer person. And we talked about coming out, and it can be so hard for each individual. I think many of us will remember that first day we decided to walk into that first gay bar or tell that first person, you know, I think I'm queer or I'm trans. Those are still major events in a personal life that require, I think they require help and support. And it is different now, but I think if there's an incubator for human thought, it's definitely the schools, and what's going on in the schools to me is very heartening.
Yeah, that's great. Wow, what a wonderful story. It sounds like Astoria Pride is like, you know, something that is definitely worth getting to.
Well, this is something we're doing all the time now, because we're better known and we have got a great network. An outfit called Mossy Tech in Astoria set us up with a fabulous phone system. So people can call in, they can get a hold of us anytime, and even while I've been on vacation here, we hear from at least one person a week that's coming out or moving to Astoria or wants to understand the resources of the area. And one of our newer board members, we were talking last night at a Zoom meeting, and he recalls how he arrived in town a couple of years ago during Pride and said, "Oh my God, I've found home." I mean, every other business had the Pride flag and colors waving. We had city permission to have our banners on every street light in downtown. You'd almost have to be blind not to see the rainbows all over the place. And we love our sponsors and our donors. We make a big deal out of it. We make a special sticker, and most of them put that sticker right on their front door. So it is that kind of a community. And to tell you the truth, people that live out at the coast, we see our neighbors coming from Valley, and it must be just one of the best date places to bring your date for a queer date as a story. I swear to God, it's just the streets are filled, and it's not just us, the local queers, it's trans people, it's people from all over. And I think they recognize they're in a safer community, probably because of the color and the presence of folks that have made a difference out here for us.
Oh yeah, I just have this one. So my last trip to Astoria, we went to Flavel House, and then of course we went over to the film museum. You know, we had to go see the Goonies exhibit, of course. And you know, right across the street from the Flavel House, it's somebody's private residence, so I like won't say exactly where it is, but it's like the whole house is just decked out in like rainbow flags and like pride colors. And I'm like, wow, this is Astoria. It's great.
It sure is.
And it's a beautiful house too. So in addition to all of the pride colors, it's just gorgeous. So
you recognize the neighborhood where we are strong and where people are waving their flags quite literally. Yeah, and that's one of the areas we drove our little parade around town through, and had a wonderful good time honking and laughing and playing music.
Yeah,
and we did it relatively safely, so we were happy with ourselves that we didn't completely cancel our Astoria Pride for 2020, being such a pivotal year. And again, it's pivotal for individuals especially. I mean, if you're that 16-year-old who's coming out and this is your first year out, you have that fire in the belly, and people want to wave those flags and say, "I count, I matter, I am here." Mm-hmm. People do it to the best of their ability today too.
Yeah.
So it's really fun being able to facilitate that.
One thing about living in a small town, I think, is that, you know, people have a different sense of connection with each other than in a big city like Portland. I mean, I noticed that in Portland, it's very common within the queer community for people to kind of, since there's so many queer people in Portland, it's kind of common for people to kind of break off into like their own groups, like trans women, trans men, lesbians, gay men, you know, and even into like, so it's just, I think it's something that people just kind of do inevitably when there's like so many people. But I wonder, like in a town like Astoria, I imagine that when you get together with other queer people, it's a lot more of just everybody who's queer. Like it might be lesbians and gays and trans, like at the same meeting or on the same boards. Can you talk about that? What's that like being in a smaller community where people are queer?
Well, you anticipate that very well, Emma, and that truly is what's going on. Because I was working in Portland, I spent a fair amount of time at our big sister organization, the Q Center on Mississippi there in Portland. And I went to the trans support meetings, and I went to other support meetings and learned a lot about the center. And you're right, it's not that they intend to be fractious or that they intend to be separate, but there are so many people. You can have 30, 40 people at a trans femme meeting. and it's a big city. there's a lot of population there. Conversely, the coast is much more insular, but we also know each other very, very well. We know the mayor on a first name basis. You know, we have those sort of connections with people. You know who the city planner is and who the chief of police is on a first name basis if you've been there for a while. So we recognize each other, and to recognize another queer person is, ooh, baby, that's such a fun feeling. And to recognize our queer friends and neighbors coming in from other places, you know, you get the drift, you get the look, you know who's walking through, and it's a lot of fun. And so, yeah, our board is very nicely diverse. It's also no secret that racial diversity is something we all have to work on better in our very white communities. So certainly these days there's a new emphasis and focus on inclusion, and we work with the Lower Hispanic Council, and we work with the Lower Columbia Diversity Coalition and other groups to foster that improved welcome and engagement and connection. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful part of being in a small town is to recognize your friends and your intentional family, if you will, as being so critical to your personal support and growth and development. It's amazing that we have all ages. We've had people from 8 to 78 engaged with our group currently. And we hear from parents that just blows my mind, Emma. We hear from parents, and now these parents are like Mama Bear, Papa Bear. Nothing better happen to their gay daughter, I'll tell you right now. You know, they want to make sure that this life is safe, and so they're standing up with their kids a lot of times. And it's just a far better world that we have to help other people come out into and to be their authentic true selves. It's just an amazing journey, and I'm just so pleased and honored to be able to work with a number of great board members. It's our organization is all volunteer. We've got a grant right now to maybe get our first staff person, but in the meantime, you know, we have 6-7 years of solid organization, and that means a lot of senior elder queer people have helped start these things and maintain them and support them. A lot of the energy is the young people who are, excuse me, just coming out and just getting their feet wet in the world, and they want to make their mark too. They want people to know. And I'm so proud of the work we've been able to do, and I know it's made a significant difference because I also work with a lot of the support groups for helping to facilitate those groups. And our support groups, of course, are peer support. We don't claim that we're doing therapy or anything. But is it therapeutic? Oh, absolutely. We know we've interceded and probably prevented suicide. We know that we've made a difference in even finding someone a home for the night, you know, a person that's just coming off the street and coming into the center and needing help and assistance. So that kind of real resource value is part of what we do now, and we know that we're going to continue on. It's a wonderful experience, honestly, Emma.
So, you know, when people think of Astoria, I think they really think about a town that has a lot of history. I mean, Astoria goes way back in terms of, and, you know, also I need to acknowledge that, you know, Astoria is on occupied indigenous land, and the indigenous people before have a long history that way precedes, like, white culture. But, like, within the European framework of understanding Astoria's history, going back to John Jacob Astor and you know, the settlement of you know, people there, because I like, for a while Astoria was part of Canada, wasn't it? And anyways, but my question is, sorry, go ahead. I mean, it was part of Britain.
Yeah, there certainly were claims. In fact, one of our most popular pubs is, you know, Fort George.
Yeah, right.
But I'm for George Washington.
Right. But I'm curious, is there any kind of documentation of the queer history of Astoria? Like, is there anywhere that the history of Astoria's queer community preceding the most recent kind of cultural awakening has been recorded? Do you know anything about that?
We do have some of this recorded, Emma. We do, and we think it is important. I agree with you entirely. If we don't know and recognize our history, it will be lost. So we have some videos, and we have some spoken and written words relative to the early origins of organized queer community for us. And we've worked with some people in the library sciences and folks that are organized and know how to do that kind of work that are helping us record that. And one of the fun things we did for our Pride event was to introduce ourselves as a board of directors, so each of us and some of our ambassadors from all over the community. So those interviews, much like you're doing today, they help us know each other and have that recorded for all time. So we have people with bright faces and eager smiles and telling their story of how they came out or came to Astoria area and what it means to them to live full lives in the bright sunshine of honesty. And it really is a new day. We have all kinds of folks in all kinds of positions, and it's to me, it's just a remarkable turnaround from days when I thought Liberace was out a little bit, but I didn't know any other queer people in 19 that were out.
I know. You know, there's so many people who just did not know that Liberace was gay. It's just like, it's just so interesting how like somebody could be, you know, on television and basically a known person, like to almost any American. And like, you know, back in the 70s, people didn't know he was gay, or if they did, it was just an open secret.
Well, yes, there were spinsters living together, and then there was this odd thing of the thing called a confirmed bachelor. Mm-hmm. And confirmed bachelors would live in these huge, hot apartment complexes. And I thought, oh my, I wonder what went on at night in the 50s there.
Yeah, it's just, you know, Astoria, I think a lot of people love Astoria because of its history. And I know you're in Warrenton, I know, so I'm talking about Astoria.
Well, but I live outside of town. I have a Warrenton address, but I live out on the Skipanon River in what's called Clatsop Plains. But Astoria's got a rich history in terms of progressives, too. The part of town that the Key Center is in is called Union Town for a reason, because the Union folks back in the 20s and 30s, these were mostly folks from Finland, and Finland had a socialist history, and that was completely reasonable. And they didn't understand why socialism or communism was so threatening to people here. So they actually had quite the, they were called derisively the Reds back in those days. And I've got a dear friend who had people carve the word red into his garage door that faced the streets, so the rest of the community would know where one of the Reds lived. It's got a lot of history of progressive effort and effort for people to be real about their politics as well as their identity.
Yeah, well, that's great. So it has a history of labor organizing, and
absolutely.
It has all kinds of histories, like with the canneries and, you know, being a port town. It has, even within a small community, it's always been a place that has, like, it's very multi-ethnic. It's always had a history of being very multi-ethnic. And of course, you know, I mean, a lot of people come to port towns because they're drawn there, you know. It's they're always very exciting places to be, so. That's
and
great.
Emma, thank you for the attribution. Thank you for the attribution for the Native American people. One of the groups I also work with is North Coast Land Conservancy, and I have the distinct pleasure of being part of a group that actually has managed to bring back some of the land of the Clatsop people. In Seaside, there is this small area near 101 that's been partly a city park and partly land that's been managed by the North Coast Land Conservancy. And recently, several acres of that land has been returned to the Clatsop people as both their Native American settlement site and a sacred site. So recognition of the indigenous people is a part of what we understand at the Q Center needs to continue to happen as well.
There was one other resource you mentioned in the story that I think people should know about, just if they haven't heard about it before, and that's, was that KMUN? Is that the call letters?
Yes, KMUN is a sister radio station to KBOO in terms of being all volunteer, essentially people operating it, and there's some staff now that helps run it, but it's been a wonderful community radio fixture. And when the lights went out in 2007, that was the radio station that stayed on the air for a week and kept people informed. And it's if you're in the area, you want to tune in to 91.5 KMUN.
91.5, okay, that's good. Do they host any kind of queer programming?
Well, you might not be surprised to hear that we have a radio hour for ourselves, and it's more than an hour. It's called Over the Rainbow, not surprisingly, and it's part of women's music, and it's part of queer music, and it's followed by the national... what's the name of that show where people are
This Way Out?
Something.
This Way Out.
This Way Out. Thanks, hon. Yeah, we that's on KMUN as well. So there is a lot of progressive and inclusive and diverse voices on the radio and print. One of the little magazines, the monthly magazine you also want to pick up when you're in Astoria is called Hip Fish. Hip Fish is kind of like the Willamette Week. Magazine, and in terms of having arts and events going on, and that they're very queer positive and have a page devoted to what's going on for us. So yeah, those are resources when you visit. Come on out and find your way to KMUN and the Hip Fish Reading, and you'll be in touch.
Thanks. We're talking with Tessa Scheller with the Lower Columbia Q Center. This is Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tessa, we've only got about 5 minutes left. This has gone so quick, so I don't know if we've covered everything, but is there anything that, you know, I haven't gotten to asking you about that you'd like to share regarding the Q Center or your own personal story or the future?
Well, I just really appreciate this opportunity, Emma. We've been friends a long time. I was trying to remember the ways we intersected. I know one of them was square dancing in Portland. That was so fun. So we have a new world reality, and I'm just delighted to be able to be part of it. I came out for the second time and dealt with my transition. I consider myself a non-binary person. And my name is Tessa James Scheller. I took my old first name and made it my middle name because I want to honor my complete life. And I think that's part of being a queer person, is to recognize our struggles through life and into the brighter light of exposure to the reality that I'm happy more people are recognizing, because they do have queer and trans friends, neighbors, and associates that are part of this fabric of the community, and it's just an honor to be able to help represent our reality. And I appreciate you so much, and for all the work that you do and the folks at KBOO do. I feel like we've got a lot of big sisters and brothers out there making this all happen. Thank you.
Thanks. So what's coming up at the, I mean, I know it's COVID-19, and so we can't really do things the way that we normally do them, but we still are doing things to create community anyways, in spite of what's going on right now. So what is there anything coming up with the Lower Columbia Q Center, you know, this summer or looking ahead?
Well, there sure is. And during the summer, it becomes a little lower key. Some of us take vacations and things, and we have our elections for our board of directors, and then we go into higher gear again in the fall, and we have our fall events that include the red dress parties and things. But during the summer, we do a lot of less formal socializing, which means, and we're still going to be doing this, we're going to still do some bonfires on the beach, we're still going to do some art in the park kind of things. We're still going to get together and take hikes, because the outdoors, the great outdoors, our commune with Mother Nature and all of her best sisters is just something that's essential to us. And we recognize the ability to see each other, even if it's going to be 6 feet away. It's more fun without a mask outdoors, but I think now it's going to be, everybody's going to be masked. We adopted all the CDC and local guidelines at the center, so we've been wearing masks there for some time. But we're going to get through this, and we're going to get through this together, and that means people are going to find their way to contact, safe contact, the best we can, and we're going to be part of that.
We need some masks, like some rainbow masks and some trans pride masks. I really do.
They are out there, but they go fast.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I just talked to a volunteer last night who's going to make us some masks. I didn't dare ask if it'd be made in rainbow style, but I'm so grateful for all the support we get from volunteers. Mm-hmm. And you know how it is. There's the board of directors is 9 people, but it takes us 150 volunteers to put on a pride event at least. So mm-hmm. we appreciate the connections we make so very, very much.
So my last couple of questions, just some recommendations maybe. So if folks are in Astoria, in addition to stopping at the Lower Columbia Q Center, if you can remind us of where that is, are there any places?
Lower Columbia Q
Center. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
The Lower Columbia Q Center is at 171 West Bond Street in Astoria. It's across the street from the Pig and Pancake and not far from the bridge that goes over to Megler, Washington. I think if you look around town, you can see that there's some rainbow bunting around several of our sponsors' buildings. But you know, it's such a welcoming and good community. Basically, all the big pubs support us. Fort George supports us. The Bowie Beer supports us. There's hardly a tavern in town that doesn't welcome us in some respect. There is no one gay bar, of course, because it's such a small town. But I think people will find that there's gay-owned businesses and restaurants all over town. I can recommend several of them. You know, the 12th Street Bistro, T. Paul's. You want to come on out and have a good time? We're here, and it's packed. I'll tell people that.
Yeah, I imagine.
Tourists won't be the first ones to figure out it's a nice 90 minute drive. You know.
And the radio show on KMUN. When is that on?
It's on the third Wednesday of the month. At 9 o'clock in the evening.
So the third Wednesday of the month at 9 o'clock in the evenings on KMUN in Astoria. Yeah. You can hear the.
Yeah.
What's the name of the program?
Our local. Over the Rainbow.
Over the Rainbow. Great.
Over the Rainbow Hour with Co Davis. Yeah.
All right.
And
thanks,
David, and a few other.
Thank you. Well, we've been talking today with Tessa James Scheller from the Lower Columbia Q Center. Tessa, is the Lower Columbia Q Center online? Does it have a website that people can go check out, or a Facebook presence?
We have several Facebook sites. One's a social site and one's more official. And we have an Instagram site, and we certainly have a website, lowercolumbiaqcenter.org.
Great. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us on Transpositive, Tessa. And I have a safe journey.
What a real fun experience. Thank you, Emma. I appreciate you and KMUN and the KBOO so very, very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Like it doesn't O Portland.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.